It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
This episode of Bushers Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. That's right. The Rangers have won 5 in a row on the road. And to celebrate this occasion, you can support this podcast by going to patreon.com/BlueShirtsBreakaway to get access to our ad-free episodes, BSBOT episodes, and more, including our Discord. This is a show where we talk about how good the Rangers are, talk about the Jets-Giants game, and then talk about how good the Rangers are more. And also our dear friend Rick Carpinello comes on to talk about his book, an awesome interview. Always great talking with Rick. Missed having him on the show. Nice to have him back. So without further ado, here's Mark Messier, the 94 legend and friend of Mike Keenan. Here we go.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Welcome to the I am your host, Ryan Mead, and I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan. Greg, the Rangers are 5-for-5 on a Western Coast trip. Things seem to be going well. Happy birthday, Panarin. Mika's a bit of Jed put a puck through a guy. Adam Fox is a walking point, and things are good.
Adam Fox is a walking power play point, sir.
It's, what, the bet is now 8-for-8? Is what is it?
I believe the bet is perfect. The only night I can't remember is that 5-1 loss against the Predators. But I think the Rangers' only goal was on a power play there, and I think Fox might have scored it. But yeah, dude, the craziest part about the bet is not that it keeps hitting, which is crazy in its own right. It's that DraftKings keeps raising the odds. It's almost like they're challenging me to make more money. It started at +140. On opening night, it dipped for two games over the weekend to +135-ish, and then it was +160 the last two nights.
For people that don't know, the bet is Adam Fox to score a point on the power play, and he's continued to do that every game. In fact, he's matched his season-high total in goals on the power play 8 games in. So, the Rangers beat the Winnipeg Jets in overtime. They won a game in overtime in Vancouver on Saturday. That's 2 overtime winners in a row. The vibes are good. The vibes are great. The team seems rejuvenated in a lot of ways. We have our good friend and dear friend Rick Carpinello on the show today, and we kind of talk a little bit about Gerard Gallant there, so stay tuned for that. But overall, and these are, we've talked about this before, these are sometimes the hardest shows for us to do. Because as much as we'd love to come on here and tell you all these amazing things, and we'll get into some, it's like the team's good. I think the team is good. Like, that's as far as it goes. It's like the team seems resilient. They've played more 60-minute games in these past, I don't know, this the beginning of the season than they have in the last two seasons. And that is, am I like even making that up? I think that's a true statement.
Well, I mean, you could be making it up, and it could be a true statement.
And no one's going to fact-check me, so let's just go for it. Let's just go for it.
The funny thing with tonight's game is I was already sucking up some copium when it was 2-1 Jets. I was prepared to come on here and say things like, listen, it was still a really successful road trip.
Yeah,
sometimes
9 points.
The Jets were playing really sound defensive hockey against the Rangers. The Rangers missed their opportunities when they had them. Kako on the breakaway, Lafreniere on the breakaway. They had golden opportunities. They didn't cash the check. And when you're going up against a goalie like Connor Hellebuck, sometimes when you don't get those free chances, it's going to cost you in the long run. And it's not like the Rangers played a bad game defensively, blah, blah, blah. I had all these things ready to go.
I had them all too. Hey, we were inches from this game being 3-2. The puck was on the line multiple times. Lafreniere missed an open shot. Lafreniere looked great all night. Like, those are signs you want to see. I'm ready to roll. 5-5, just celebrating. Just having a good time. There's no. And by the way, now we get to go home. The Rangers are playing Country Road in the locker room as their celebratory song, which is very notable. And then they get to play the Carolina Hurricanes on Thursday as like maybe one of their first true tests, quote unquote, of the season. They get 3 days off here. That's as good as it gets. Like, you can, going on the road after like what happened in Nashville, winning five in a row, which, by the way, I think they've notoriously been pretty good on this West Coast Canada trip, but never 5-5, first time in history. And then you get to go home and play the Carolina Hurricanes, and after 3 days rest, like, that's as, in the NHL, with the scheduling the way it is and the way we complain about it, it doesn't really get better than that.
Winning is nice. You know,
God, it feels so fucking good.
I think it all boils down to that. Man, hockey, huh? What a sport. What? Especially when you're winning.
When you win five in a row, like, this is what the Bruins feel like all the time. Like, I don't understand. Do they win again tonight, these fucks?
Like, how many points would the Rangers have if they just played in the Western Conference? 140?
Well, what do the Avalanche have most years? Like 120, something like that? Yeah. It's like, Jesus. Yeah, the Jets are, by the way, Jets have slouched. They're second in their division for the Central. And obviously, Blake Wheeler did not get his goal tonight, but I thought his line, and especially Will Cooley, by the way.
There were a couple times there where Blake had goal, what I thought were golden opportunities to score. Mm-hmm. If we won that same game parlay tonight on top of everything
would've
else.
Would have been
over. Oh, God. We wouldn't be doing this podcast.
Would have been over. Guys, we canceled the show. We're just putting the Rick interview out because there's nothing else to talk about. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I've seen some people. The part of winning streaks like these is it's really fascinating to see what nits people are trying to pick with this team.
What are you going to say?
Rob Luker, God bless him, friend of the show.
Rob, love Rob.
He's correctly been pointing out that the fourth line has been rough to start the year.
They're terrible.
The problem with the fourth line is they're awful at 5v5, but I still think all those guys do useful things on the penalty kill, which is what they're here to do.
Their job is not to score.
No, and the top three lines have been so good that it doesn't matter the fourth line has been bad, and most games Laviolette has been smart enough to realize, oh shit, I should probably just not play my fourth line late, and this is probably going to be a winning strategy. And Ryan, I got to tell you, so far so good.
What else do you want me to say? It's been like one fart noise versus the Predators, and a ref game versus the Columbus Blue Jackets, and the rest of it's been wins and W's. I don't even know what to nitpick about. I want to do a segment of calls. That was awesome. I could do that. Yeah, I could do that right now. Lafreniere tonight a couple times looked more confident than I've seen him in his entire 10 years as a Ranger. That was awesome. At one point, Will Cooley was called for the puck in center ice and took a shot and whipped one, and if it would have went in, I would have exploded. That was awesome. A lot of confidence. Adam Fox exists. That was awesome. Igor Shesterkin made a save with what I believe it was his asshole. Like, that's awesome.
I can't emphasize this enough, because I've seen the replay five times now. Mika Zibanejad put the puck through Connor Hellebuck.
I have no idea how he got that puck in.
I know how he got it in. He put it through his gut.
It's like we're shooting this 109 miles per hour. It's going right through.
He defied physics there for a little bit. Are you a Futurama guy?
I am.
Remember the episode where Fry gets stung by the bee that puts Leela in a coma that she thought killed Fry?
Yes.
And then when she wakes up, Fry literally just has a hole in his stomach?
Yes.
That was Mika Zibanejad tonight.
It's probably a good time to mention this. Watching the Rangers tonight and watching what I believe for the most part, look, the third was a little bit of a, I don't want to say a slog. Both teams were kind of exhausted. No big deal. But after watching Jets-Giants yesterday, and I don't watch football that often. I really don't. But I saw everybody being like, this is the worst game of all time. So I turned it on in a second, and my God, it was one of the worst sporting events I've ever watched. And to watch a professional hockey team play the day after just feels so good. Just like, wow, what a team. So much better than the Jets or the Giants.
I have watched 34 years worth of Mets baseball, Ryan. There have been some absolutely atrocious teams that I have watched in my lifetime. Never, never has anything resembled whatever the fuck that Giant-Jet game was. I words do not do it justice. I wish Roger Angel was still alive, the great baseball writer, so that he could write about that football game. Because it deserves a Pulitzer to explain what in God's name happened there.
Look, the Rangers should win 5-5, but I have to talk about this. One of the craziest things was all the videos afterwards, like Joe Beningo of WFAM fame is doing a dance celebrating in the fucking Meadowlands parking lot. And dude, how could you be celebrating after that win?
We could do an entire episode on WFAN if we really wanted to.
We should do a BSBOT special on just WFAN. That's a good idea.
Yeah.
That might have to happen.
I'm a little sad.
There's a lot to talk about.
There sure is. But yeah, anyway, the good sports. You know, people won't watch soccer in the United States, but they'll watch Jets-Giants.
Jets-Giants was the worst thing I've ever experienced. Like, I would purposely go watch, and I'm a sicko and psychopath. I go to The Room, the movie, Midnight Showings. It's one of the worst movies ever, and it's so bad that it's good. Jets-Giants was so bad, I just couldn't look away. It was a car crash. It wasn't good. There was nothing fun about it. I was, like, laughing because it's just, like, the Giants quarterback had -8 passing yards.
But it wasn't even a fun car crash. It was... It was me driving in my Honda Fit going down a snowy hill, slowly fading into traffic at 5 miles an hour,
and I just can't stop. Yes. How sad can this get? If only they had Peter Laviolette. Is Daboll allowed back in the garden currently?
No. Someone asked us. Oh, it's a 5-star. I won't answer it now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you want to answer it now? It might be worth a full segment here.
Look, I just think when you have the juju the Rangers have right now, you can't bring another juju. And Daboll, I know he was undefeated at the Garden when he was in the playoffs.
You gotta be careful with the way you're pronouncing some words here, buddy.
Whoa, Gregory. You know I'm talking about Juju Smith-Schuster, of course.
Yeah. No. I hear what you're saying. It's a dangerous time, Brian,
okay,
is all I'm going to say.
You understand. No, you know exactly what I'm saying. There's some bad vibes is what the children call it, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And you can't mix those up. So I don't think Daboll is allowed to really come to the Garden for right now.
Yeah, I'm saving it for the 5-star because I have such a hot take.
Just going to revoke the pass.
I'm so excited for the hot take I'm going to drop on you in 5-star. I'm going to tease it here. Yeah, I don't know. Trying to get back to the Ranger game, Ryan. These podcasts are really hard.
Because
it's so hard when everything is going right. And
it's almost like I want to just sit here and recap the games. It's like, okay, Saturday, the Rangers won. Here's how. It's like, there's no other take. Like, the Kadri Miller goal was fucking sweet. The Rangers looked great in that here's something nice I could say. Credits to the Vancouver Canucks. They actually looked pretty good. And JT Miller got to score again, which we all knew was going to happen. And then all of a sudden, they get to overtime, and the Rangers are able to beat them. Just find a way. This team has found a way 5 games in a row. And a couple of the games, they didn't even find ways. They just destroyed. These are the games you're the most tired. These last two of the road trip. You can even see it in the third period. They were exhausted, but they fought off the penalty kill, of which the ref... I don't know why you can't review that kind of penalty, where the guy just trips, and then we can just see if he's tripped.
I don't know. Because you go down a slippery slope then. This is like when the NFL tried to review pass interference, and even when they had the review, you still had awful pass interference calls.
Yeah.
In real time, it looked like a trip from the ref's perspective. I get that. I acknowledge that.
In replay,
it's awful. The guy falls down, and Lindgren just so happened to have his stick in the vicinity. In real time... Would you rather a ref make a penalty call where there wasn't a penalty or not call a penalty where there was one? Because I think I'd rather err on the side of calling if it were the Rangers, right? And if that was a Ranger that I thought got phantom tripped, would I feel... Which one feels better for me? I think I'd rather them make a call... that could result in chaos versus, first of all, it wasn't a trip in Vancouver. I got bad news for you.
I don't know if it was a trip. I saw the Valaket explanation of which, hey, they're both fighting for the same ice sort of situation. And I could see that. I could also see why Vancouver fans thought it was a trip.
Sure. I'm sure I would have felt the same way if the roles were reversed. But
I'm trying to call it even. That's all.
Yeah, I think that's a 50-50 call, and sometimes you can't make that call. But I also, I'm probably saying this because the Rangers ended up winning the game and it doesn't impact me personally. I was fine in the moment with them calling that penalty, even though on replay it was not a penalty.
Okay. I guess that's fair. It's like they won the game. I was settling for a point, as you know. It's like, hey, look, 9 points in a road trip. That's fucking awesome.
I was settling for a loss before Adam Fox reminded me that he had not scored his power play point yet.
He's like, Greg, by the way, I need to do this. It's once a game. I don't know how this is possible, but
I should be keeping a running tab to see just how much money everybody would be up if they've bet $10 every game on this.
I'm sure there is a way to do that called an Excel spreadsheet, and then you can figure it out from there. Do you think it was weird? And I know I saw you tweet this out, so I'm kind of baiting you here. Vancouver, the trip call, was it a trip or not, was the talk of the night. But the Rangers won this game, so we won't ever hear about that trip again.
Yeah. Man, it's mostly Wyshynski, I should say. I didn't see many other people.
Oh, I didn't really even see Wish talk about it, so that's kind of on me.
Yeah, it was. I saw he was in Johnny's replies.
Ah,
and it just rubbed
well, they're
me
best
wrong.
Friends.
Of course.
Johnny knows the people in the industry. Have you heard about this? Hey, Johnny.
He's gonna listen to this and text you.
I know,
be like, what
I'm
the fuck did
hi.
I ever do to you, man?
Nothing. You didn't know anything.
Yeah, it was mostly Wyshynski. I also just get confused. Once again, Ryan.
Mm.
This is a Greg thing. I get it. Devils fans care too much about the Rangers. I thought about this again the other day. I still don't have the Devils in my top four, and this comes off the god-awful. I don't, Ryan. I don't. I am well aware of anything the Penguins are doing at any point in time.
To be fair, I was just about to make fun of myself. I was like, hey, did you see the Penguins last night? Yeah,
I am well aware of what the Penguins are doing at any point in time. I still hate the Flyers more than them. I still think the Islanders are a better in Metro rival. And at best, I can put the Devils at four. At best! But it is some distance there. I don't understand how on a Saturday night when your hockey team isn't playing that you're giving a shit about a hockey game not involving your favorite team and you're worked up about it.
That being said, if the Penguins get blown out 7-0, I will be there.
Oh, I will fire off jokes.
I will
every
be there.
Day.
I will.
But
be
I just.
There.
Oh my God! This was a game that started after 10 o'clock on a Saturday night, and I'm seeing Devils fans that stayed up that late to then cry that the Rangers won. What are you doing? You're a loser. You're a fucking loser. I have no other words for you. None.
But I will insult the Penguins.
But, Ryan, I do it the next morning because I'm not paying attention to it at 1 o'clock. I'm sorry.
Some people work night day jobs, I guess. I don't know.
I have better things to do. If I'm awake at 1 o'clock on a Saturday, Ryan, I promise you I have better things to do.
Yeah, you're correct. You were absolutely correct. Is there anything else from, like, the road trip, especially the last three games, that we want to point out? In terms of, like, hey, the power play is clicking. Seems like that's kind of nice. I really like these three defensive pairs. I think even the Gustav-Schneider pair has been pretty freaking good.
Schneider's settled in after a couple rough games to start the season.
Yeah, he's figured it out. And I know there was a little bit of a misnomer tonight on the second play, the second goal for the Jets, but that's okay. I'm going to forgive that one. They all kind of left the ear to die there.
I thought for a couple seconds if I should be frustrated that the Rangers aren't putting the puck in the back of the net at 5v5 the last two games. At the same time, this isn't like previous years, especially under Gallant, where not only were they not scoring at 5v5, they couldn't get the puck on their own stick. They couldn't possess the puck. The New York Rangers are possessing the puck. They are setting up the offense. They are dictating play at 5v5. I think this is one of those stretches where it just so happened the puck isn't routinely going in the back of the net. But even though they're not scoring at 5v5 and the power play is dominating as much as it is, I'm unlike in previous years, I'm not worried about how they're looking at 5v5 because the top three lines are fucking humming. And at no point, there are a couple instances tonight where the Rangers got caught in their own zone and couldn't seem to get the puck out. But it has happened with such infrequency this year, I'm legitimately not in the slightest bit worried. No, sir.
Me either, and I'm looking just at the last five games because we did record after the Kraken game last week, so we haven't really talked about Flames or Oilers. The Oilers game was a decimation. No McDavid equals we don't know what we're doing. Just we talked about it on an OT. If you want to listen to it, feel free, but just smothered Draisaitl. And even the Flames game wasn't – it was like a no-sweat situation. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of it. We just win this game now on accident. And then they win two 60-minute games. in games they like, look, it's overtime. It could have gone to the shootout and we could have been 1 point. Who cares? But this is what makes good teams great teams, right? This is what we always talk about, the consistency and being able to win these sorts of games. It reminds me a lot of the team from 2 years ago, if that makes sense.
Gallant year one?
Yeah, they just kind of like hung around. But at the same time, the Gallant year one didn't really have easy wins. Like Gallant year one doesn't beat the Oilers 3-0 with Jonathan Quick in the shutout.
No,
which still,
I don't
still
think
hilarious.
So. Jonathan Quick got a shutout.
Dude,
I forgot
this
that
is
that
where
happened
we're at.
This week.
I know. This is
oh,
like,
my God.
Like, if we, like, I should have written down an agenda of weird and wild things that happened this week, but Jonathan Quick was getting a shutout is definitely one of them.
Who's
the Oilers?
Who's the worst Ranger right now? Is it Blake
this
Wheeler?
This is a great topic.
This is, I don't even, it might be Wheeler by default, but in his defense, he's playing such inconsequential minutes that I don't care.
I think it might be Goodrow.
I don't know. I still think Goodrow's doing good stuff on the penalty kill. At 5v5, you're right. That entire fourth line is tough at 5v5. But Bonino's winning important faceoffs.
Yeah, that's why I didn't say him. And I didn't say VC because VC is a defensive-minded winger who's doing pretty well.
Bonino, VC, and whichever one of Goodrow, Pitlick, those four guys are here to kill penalties. Whatever they do at 5v5, as long as they aren't getting... They're getting caved in, but they're not surrendering goals. So if they want to keep generating negative offense, go for it. They are here to make sure we're not giving up a ton of goals on the penalty kill, and they're doing their job. I'm just not going to worry about what they do at 5-on-5, especially, again, when those top nine is humming along like they are.
I'm really, really excited. It's kind of hard and a little rare for me to get super up for regular season games, but this Hurricane game is going to have that kind of like, ooh, if we win this one, I really feel it. Like, I know it's the regular season, it doesn't matter, but there's a couple times a year where like the games get a little special, and I feel like that one on Thursday is really lining up for it. Like Rangers Islanders is always special no matter what.
It's the 10th game of the year. I just see the narratives I'm going to be telling you during OT.
Oh, yeah. Hey, look, we lost 3-2. Hard.
If the Rangers win, we're going to start having the conversation of if the Hurricanes don't keep Rod, do you walk away from Laviolette?
Oh, God.
I'm getting in there.
Well, now it's hard, right? It's actually hard. It's actually hard right now. This is when the stock is up situation. Like this is the sell high. I don't know if Laviolette's stock is ever going to get higher than this unless he wins the cup. It is. I mean, the guy's Q rating right now is astronomical. I can't say a bad thing about the guy. What do you want me to say? I don't have anything. It's wild. All right. Do you want to get to our interview with Rick where he'll tell me I'll hate the coach in about 2 weeks?
And a random defensive player? Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man. You know, Rick like just rattles off a bunch of tropes that we talk about all the time, and it's been the same for like 40 years. It's same thing all the time. So anyway, we'll transition over our friend Rick. We'll come back and do some five-star questions, and we will see you there. Transition. Hey, yo, I'm here to tell you about our ticket sponsor for the entire New York Rangers season, TickPick. TickPick is a website for tickets. You're never going to believe that. But the best part about it is the price you see is the price you get. That's right. Hashtag no fees. When you log into TickPick, what you're going to be able to do is search for a Ranger game or any other game for that fact and look for the best deals by score. I love looking at the best deals. It says like I love seeing like an A- for super cheap at a game near me. It's one of my favorite feelings. Actually, whenever I go to Flyers Rangers, I use TickPick. It's super easy. And what I'm going to do for you, because you are such loyal listeners, I'm going to give you a code. It's called BlueShirts15. And for 50, you get $15 off any order placed over $99 in the app. That's right. It's for one time, all users can get $15 off when you place an order over $99 in the app when you're using codes BlueShirts15. Just let them know. It's like a free $15 from Blue Shirts Breakaway. You're going to go to the Ranger game anyway. You buy tickets on TickPick, our official ticket sponsor. All right, back to the show. Hey, we're back with our first and only guest of the day. He is an author and a longtime beat writer of the New York Rangers. He's recently written a book called The Franchise, A Curated History of the Blue Shirts. Our dear friend Rick Carpinello. Rick, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. So nice to see you again. So nice to be with you guys again. And
it's been too long, man. Really, where have you been? You know, you've been hiding.
It's always fun. It's always funny and it's always fun. So,
really, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Yeah, look,
likewise.
I got the book. I was thinking this legitimately, and this is I was riding around my bike. I was like, I actually don't know if there's a better person to write a book like this than Rick. You've kind of been around through the whole thing. You've been through the ins and outs of the Rangers organization. You've seen it all. Was there any part of this book that was even hard for you to write? You've pretty much lived it. It's almost an autobiography without talking about yourself.
Well, but I do talk about myself too. I mean, I talk about my career too, and some of the crazy things that have happened. You know, I was telling some of my fellow beat writers or fellow former beat writers the other day that I probably could have written 3 or 4 times as much. That was the hard part, was cutting it down to what it turned out to be. If I talked about some of the adventures we had on the beat, I'd still be writing it. And, you know, I finished a year ago. So, but the other stuff was somewhere in the back of my failing brain, I had these stories, and I wanted to get most of them out. And I spent about a year compiling a file of just stories that I wanted to tell, and I didn't tell all of them. So it was hard paring them down, but it was a book that I was able to write without doing a lot of extra work, in addition to going back and reading some of my old stories and reading some other site stories, just to remind myself of how things went and what was said at certain times. I really didn't interview a lot of extra people to write this book. It was pretty much, you know, from the brain to the typewriter.
What version of the book included the chapter about Blue Shirts Breakaway?
Yeah, that was going to be the first chapter, and then, you know, we had some had some disagreements about whether it should be the last chapter. But somebody cut it out, I think.
Yeah, no, I mean, you could have painted the scene, the dimly lit bar for people who subscribe to The Athletic New York.
So people don't know the story. It's pretty funny. Like, look, Rick, you're maybe not the nicest person on Twitter. You're the nicest person I've ever met in person, and I didn't know that at the time. Like, I had no idea. So we were going to this event, being like, we're finally going to meet Rick. It wasn't like a confronting situation, but we were just curious, trying to network. And we came up, and we started talking to you. It was like, oh my God, Rick is the nicest guy I've ever met. Like, what is going on?
But let me clarify, though, that it was a dark bar, and there were a fair amount of people there.
There were.
You guys were lurking in the back with your shirts on, right? With your blue shirts, breakaway shirts on.
Such nerds.
And it was confrontational at the start. And I wasn't comfortable. And then we talked a while, and I think I bought you guys a beer, and that really settled you down. That seemed to be like like the milk bones, you know, milk bone.
You got to feed the dogs. That's what we're doing. But we immediately after that sung your phrases for a very, very long time.
Likewise, too. Right? You guys are good guys. You're a little bit nuts, which is great.
I think you're selling us short by just saying a little bit. We know we're full blown crazy. You can say it.
But you know what? And I've said this in places recently too. The Ranger fans are, right? I mean, Ranger fans are nuts, and they're nuts in a really good and great way. Some of them are nuts in a bad way. Not too many, but they're nuts. And you have to be nuts to sell out a building of 18,200 or whatever the heck it is these days, year after year after year, with one championship in 83 years. And if they go another 83 years with one championship or none, they'll sell out. It'll still be sold out, and people will still buy the jerseys, and people will still go on all the sites so they can make their crazy comments. They'll still hate every coach. There's always going to be a defenseman that everybody hates, and there's always going to be complaining about some fourth liner, the 12th or 13th forward. And it's great. I mean, the passion is amazing. Like, How do you get that kind of passion? Like, I never had that passion when I was a kid growing up as a fan. I used to go to Yankee Stadium. I didn't care what the standing said or who the manager was, or I just wanted to see them win that day. If they won that day, I went away happy. And if they lost that day, I was like, they'll get them tomorrow. I never had that passion. I never understood that passion until the dawn of comments under stories. You know, we didn't get that when we just had newspapers. And then I realized in blogs and other areas where people were allowed to comment how nuts these fans are. And I honestly mean that in a almost 100% good way. They're nuts. And you guys are the chief nuts, I guess. I've come to appreciate that craziness and that passion for the team and for the sport. And I assume for other sports, for you guys too, that's just, it's something that in the last maybe 20 years, maybe 17 years, whatever, I've come to realize that it's a great craziness that you all possess.
Let me do a natural plug here because it seems to be the right way. I think we say this all the time on the show. If you are listening to the show, you are a psychopath for the most part. And if you are listening to the show, that also means you'll enjoy the franchise. It's a book that literally covers everything in Rangers history. And I kind of want to go into some of those, I don't know, more crazy moments. I know you kind of told the story on New Ice City, Vince Mercogliano's podcast, in case anybody wants to check it out, of you you getting like walking into a party with Mark Messier after the cup. But is there any other, like, obviously that's an incredibly memorable moment, an awesome thing, but is there any like crazy story you were even like, should I put this in the book or no?
I don't think there's anything that I didn't want to put in the book. I'm trying to think if there were. I don't think there was, but there were some stories in there. I mean, I told a story in there, and it's just a short. There's a lot of quick hit type stories in there. It's a short one. I was in Calgary in the early 2000s, probably maybe late 90s, probably early 2000s, and I was generally the last person out of the press box each night because I had later deadlines, and. So I was able to, you know, stay in there longer and write longer, and I had more space usually. And so on this night in Calgary, I was the last one out of the press box again. And you have to wind your way out of the arena and find a door that's not locked to get out. And, you know, so, and it's a, you know, it's a foreign arena to me. Well, I go out and I had no idea it snowed during the game, and it snowed a lot. It was like, you know, a foot and a half of snow. I go out and the big metal door slams behind me. Now you can't get back in.
Oh, no.
And so I don't have a cell phone. We don't have cell phones at that point. I don't have any way of connecting with anybody. I don't know how to get to my hotel if I could walk through this snow. I don't know how to get there. There's no cabs. There's no cars on the streets. I'm going to die out there. I am going to freeze to death in the snow in Calgary. How perfect, right, for a hockey writer. And I sit out there for a few minutes trying to think how I'm going to survive. And sure enough, the door opens and Brian Sutter comes out. He's the last man in the building. And he puts his arm around me and says, "What are you doing out here? What the F are you doing out here?" And I said, "I'm basically going to freeze to death is what I'm doing." I said, "I don't have no idea how to get back to my hotel." And he takes me to his pickup truck. And he drives me back to my hotel in his four-wheel pickup truck. And he saved my life.
You were seconds from death, Rick. Yeah, you really were. There's nothing you were going to be able to do there.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know what I was going to do. So, I mean, Brian Sutter might have saved my life. If he didn't save my life, he certainly saved me a lot of pain and suffering. And he was the coach of the Flames, and God bless him. And, you know, the Sutters have caused the Ranger fans a lot of agita over the years. But I will forever be indebted to Mr. Brian Sutter.
Rick, you mentioned earlier, Ranger fans, we have a propensity of picking a fight with certain head coaches. We'll get to Laviolette in a second, but I'm curious, in your opinion, I'm sure you write about this in the book, which coach do you think got the most vitriol from Ranger fans in your time covering the team?
I guess there are levels, because I think, you know, Brian Trotche was never embraced for a moment, nor should he have been. And likewise, I think maybe a guy like John Muckler didn't get enough vitriol. But I think for a guy who was as accomplished as he was and had the record that he did as Rangers coach, and you know where I'm going, Alain Vigneault, I think, easily got the most vitriol, you know, considering all those things. His record is, you know, compared to other Rangers coaches, it's untouchable. And I think that, maybe you guys can tell me what you think, because I know that you guys didn't like him. And I know that most Ranger fans hated him. But they've also hated everybody since then and a few guys before that.
I hated him at the end. Yeah. I am on record saying he was the perfect guy for those 2013, 2014, 2015 teams.
Mm-hmm.
That he was right for that group.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't right for a rebuild, which is what the Rangers should have been able to realize a lot sooner than they did. It got ugly at the end. Didn't like him at the end.
Yeah.
It's tough because Ranger coaches throughout the 2000s were just generic dudes I didn't have opinions about. Mm-hmm. I, as much as I love Tortorella, I loved him in a way where I never thought he was a good coach, but my God, did he entertain me?
Yeah.
And I'll say this. All right. You have to give Ryan and I credit. We were pretty sympathetic to Quinn throughout his entire tenure.
We were, unfortunately. Whether that's good or bad. Gerard Glenn came in after that. Yeah, so
I thought that a lot was misunderstood about Quinn. I thought he accomplished his mission statement, which was to see them through the rebuild. I mean, what else could he do? He was a teacher first and foremost. He tried to teach kids like Kako how to win, how to play both ends of the ice. He had kids like Adam Fox, and he taught him how to use his body in the defensive zone to be a good defensive defenseman. Other guys, Ryan Lindgren, Keandre Miller, these guys learned under him. You know, Mika Zibanejad had his best years ever under Quinn. Artemi Panarin had his best year ever under Quinn. It goes on pretty strong and pretty long. Now, was he going to be around for the end? No, he knew when the corner arrived to turn, he wasn't going to be the head coach. And could he have been? Probably not. I don't know that for sure, but he probably would have been the wrong guy. But I think for what he was hired to do, he did it. And, you know, he didn't play Lafreniere on the power play. Well, come on. You know, I mean,
the power play still works right now, Carp, and it's still his creation. Quinn's power play.
It is. It absolutely is. And, you know, the kids only get 20 or 30 seconds. Well, what do you want? You want Zibanejad and Panarin leaving the ice when they're in the zone with the puck? I mean, you want those guys going for a change? I think the logic there is a little skewed. And I thought Quinn did a good job. I thought, I thought he's a better coach on the ice in terms of system and in terms of adjusting than Gallant. I'm going to say that.
You're in the right place. You're home.
You're barking up the right tree. I'll say, look, as much as we defended Quinn, he came with his faults, right?
Yeah, yeah.
He was a bit quick to change lines in game.
Yep.
He didn't trust what he would set up before the game started. He was herky-jerky, but that's kind of what you expect from a first-time NHL coach, right?
And
a guy that's going from the college game.
Right. And he wanted to win while he was teaching. There's no
right.
Yeah.
Which
maybe he should not have.
Right. And that, you know, he's learned that. I think he's learned that lesson now because he ain't trying to win in San Jose.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're home now, Rick, if you ever want to get anything off your chest about Gerard Gallant, because this is tough. Okay. Right. The Rangers are 6-2. It's only been 8 games. They look great right now. Yeah. I'm sure there's going to be a stretch in January where we all have problems with Laviolette and he's not doing what we want him to do and blah, blah, blah. At the same time, the New York Rangers won what? 220 points with Gerard Gallant under the helm and went to a Eastern Conference final in which they were at one point up 2-0 in game three while having a 2-0 series lead. It's hard to sit here and say Gerard Gallant was an awful coach. At the same time, the more evidence piles up, the more it's just obvious he didn't do much coaching.
Exactly. And he didn't. And, you know, there's a lot of caveats to his record. I mean, that first year when he was the coach, that lead, the NHL, the entire NHL, and especially the Eastern Conference, was split down the middle. These are the eight teams that are good. These are the eight teams that suck. And the eight teams that are good all fatten their records against the teams that stunk. The playoffs, the eight teams that were going to the playoffs were decided by Christmas. And then he goes into the playoffs, and let's not forget, he beat a second-string goalie and a third-string goalie. He beat Pittsburgh after Sidney Crosby went down. You know, these are all things you have to, if you're going to be honest with yourself, consider. Now, was it great that they came from behind and won those series? Yeah, yeah. But did we also say, man, he got outcoached that game for a couple of the games against Carolina, in Carolina, the first three, I guess? You know, he got his pants taken off. And
it's bad.
You know, there were no adjustments. There wasn't a system that you want to play against a good team in the playoffs. Grant, okay, full marks. They won those two series, and they were halfway home to beating Tampa. And that would have been incredible. And a lot of credit goes to the players, too. But let's not say him going to the Eastern Conference Final was the same as whatever, the 96-97 team going to the conference final, or even the 85-86 teams going to the conference final. It's not the same. It's a different animal.
No, and they had more talent than they knew what to do with last year. It's like, you look at the guys they had on. I know the names are the names, and they're maybe not what they used to be, but still, the talent up and down the roster was unbelievable. And to not make one adjustment, it kills me to this day. It hurts every single day, Rick.
And I don't want to kill him. And again, I'm not here to say he was a terrible coach.
Oh, yeah, no.
Like, because you know, when you go from a coach who barks and honks and the next coach has to be more of a player's guy. And that's the way it always or almost always goes. You know, it went from Rennie to Tortorella. It went from Tortorella to Vigneault. It goes that way. It bounces back and forth. You know, Roger Nielsen to Mike Keenan, back to Colin Campbell. So that's the way it goes. And he was that. He had a lot of trust in his players, which is also a good trait in a lot of ways. But I'm not putting him in the Hall of Fame based on those two seasons.
Same. I think this is a good time to talk about 94 because Greg and I, during the pandemic, we still did two podcasts a week. No idea how we did that. but on top of that, we rewatched the entire 94 playoffs. It was like a big thing for us.
Yep.
And one of our big takeaways was that the players all hated Mike Keenan and that they won in spite of him. You were there. Can you tell us if that's true?
Well, it's close to true. Mark Messier didn't hate him, and that's what mattered. Keenan was very sure to have Messier in his corner from day one, and he did. So I don't think some of the players didn't hate him. A lot of the players wanted to fight him. A lot of the people around the organization wanted to fight him every day. If you're telling me that, and this is all in the book, that there wasn't chaos from October to June, then you're lying. There was. I mean, it was Keenan, and he almost sabotaged it multiple times in the Devil Series. He almost sabotaged it during the Stanley Cup Finals when he's negotiating with other teams with 4 years remaining on his contract. He almost sabotaged it when he wanted to, between Game 6 and 7 of the Stanley Cup Final, take the team to Lake Placid to get away from the media for a day. I mean, you know, Messier and Kevin Lowe had to talk him out of that. He almost sabotaged the whole thing. Now, he won. How many coaches in the last 83 years have won the Stanley Cup?
My friend.
That won, exactly. And he, you know, and the GM too. And he can't get a job in the NHL. So, you know, all full marks to Mike Keenan. He came he conquered. He won the Stanley Cup. To say they won it despite him is a bit strong. To say they won it because of him is way too strong. And, you know, I mean, that team was great. That was the best team in the league. They beat the second best team in the league in the conference finals. And they nearly coughed it up a couple of times. Now, one of the things in my book, and I just go into this briefly, is this. If they lose game six in the Meadowlands, which they were on their way to do it. They were going to lose that game if Mike Richter lets in one more. And Mike Richter was better than Mark Messier that day. That was the Messier guarantee game. Mike Richter was better than Mark Messier that day. Otherwise, they lose that game. If Mateau doesn't score in double overtime in game seven, somebody else on the Devils scores. Zalapukin or Riche. Suppose somebody else scores. What if they lose game seven against Vancouver? You know, all these ifs, right? If they lose any of those games, we're now 0 for 83. How are we looking back at Mark Messier? Is he a coach killer in 93 and a guy who couldn't get them across the finish line? How are we looking at, I mean, Brian Leetch's number goes up in the rafters no matter what. But do Adam Graves and Mike Richter's numbers go up in the rafters? Yeah, all these things are legit questions if they had lost one of those games. And they nearly lost all three of them. So
yeah,
there's a lot to say there. They were a great team. They won a great championship. They will live forever in the hearts of New York people. Mark Messier said he's bought a few drinks since then in New York, but not very many. And, you know, it's a discussion to have. And I didn't go into it too deeply, but what if, you know, what if, where are we if that didn't happen?
Yeah. Going back and rewatching the series, one thing that stood out to both Ryan and I is the Messier guarantee hat trick is maybe the biggest wet fart hat trick I've ever seen with my own two eyes. Like, it's like you hear the stories of it growing up. You have the memory of it when you're a little kid, and Ryan, in my case, and you think it was this glorious moment of sports excellence. And there are some of the ugliest goals I've ever seen in my entire life. Yeah. And one of them's an empty netter. So it's like, I don't know about that. But I have two big 94 questions I want to ask you, Rick.
Yeah, before you do, just the empty netter was an empty netter. But let's face it. The Devils were going to score on that power play.
Yes.
And so, I mean, that was a pretty big empty netter.
Well,
that's fair.
I think it was game five against the Devils. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, how do you think, you talked about Ranger fans being crazy and all the ways we have to express our psychosis on the internet these days. Where do you think Ranger fans would be if Gerard Gallant, David Quinn, Peter Laviolette, whoever, benched Adam Fox for over a period and a half of a playoff game in the Eastern Conference Finals against a division rival like Mike Keenan did Brian Leetch?
Amazing, right? And then, you know, he also benched Messier a little bit. And then he pulled Richter. So he pulled Shesterkin and put in, you know, Jonathan Quick. What if, you know, and then it was a two-goal game, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
He does not pull Glenn Healy for an extra skater at the end. Okay? Did he quit? Did he just go home? You know, if there were social media back then throughout that series, throughout those playoffs, throughout that regular season, it would have been bizarre. It'd be stuff you'd still be talking about. You know, you guys probably wouldn't have anything to complain about ever again. You'd have no fingertips left from, you know, putting your comments on the internet and on Twitter and on, or whatever.
We still call it Twitter. You're in the right place.
Yeah. But I mean, it would be, if Twitter had been invented, then it would still have been Twitter.
Yeah, sure.
So,
yeah. Ryan and I came away from that series. We've always loved Brian Leetch, but we don't give Brian Leetch the level of love he probably deserves based off 94. Yeah. But you're talking what ifs, Rick, and I want to ask you, it's still my favorite what, it's my second favorite what if. Lindros is still my top what if in Ranger history. But the trade I always go back to when it comes to building the 94 team that I have the most trouble with is, and this is timely because they just retired his number and inducted him into their Hall of Fame, trading Doug Waite for Esa Tiikkanen. Yep. It sounds weird to say, because listen, I understand how important Tiikkanen was to that 94 Cup run. I understand his relationship with Messier. I understand leaning veteran over young kid down the middle for a New York Ranger team that desperately wanted to get over the hump. And I get selling your soul for the title. Lord knows I'd do it in a heartbeat for the Mets. I understand this completely. At the same time, God damn it, did they need a Doug Waite? In like their entire history, have they waited for a guy like Doug Waite?
Yeah.
And they shipped him off, probably traded more than they needed to in order to get Tiikkanen. And to me, Rick, that's the one a lot of people like to say, Amonte, you don't even need to hear my opinions of Glenn fucking Anderson and how awful he is.
Yeah.
But the one that weighs heavy on me, pun intended, is Doug Waite.
Yeah, that's all very fair. I mean, I was a little critical of Waite as a kid because I didn't think he moved his feet enough. I thought he watched plays a lot and he got stuck standing still in the defensive zone a lot. But that was all part of the learning process. And Tiikkanen gave them a lot. Let's be very, very honest. Tiikkanen gave them a ton that they needed. But Tiikkanen came before the other guys. So when they got Tiikkanen, they really were lacking in that championship experience department. But you're right. I mean, that's in hindsight, in whatever, even foresight, that's a really tough trade to make. And the Monte trade, I agree with you 100%. I still think they could have won the Cup with Monte. I think they still could have won the Cup with Gartner over Anderson.
Well, that's because Glenn Anderson did fucking nothing. Like,
but even if he did.
Rick, we watched those games. I got to tell you, I would have been crushing Keenan for seven different things. I wish social media existed in 1994. I would have been so mean to Glenn Anderson.
Yeah.
Like, I had so many one-liners ready to go for his lack of doing anything in the playoffs.
And it was his ridiculous retaliatory stick foul that set up the power play at the end of game six that allowed Messier to score the shorthanded goal. So, and he was an undisciplined player. I think he's a good guy. They loved having him around. He's a Hall of Fame player with his entire resume, but yeah, he's not a better player than Mike Gartner, first of all. And Mike Gartner probably would have done more to help that team win, in my opinion.
They at least won, and that's the good news. Now I want to talk a little about another what if. I think about what ifs a lot, especially in the 2010s, as Ranger fans likely do. Look, I think the Kings series, no matter what you say, they lost in double overtime a couple of times. The Kings were probably the better team. The biggest what if for me, Rick, is when Matt Zuccarello gets hit in the head and loses his ability to speak and is no longer able to play. I think if Matt Zuccarello is available in those series, especially against the Tampa Bay Lightning, they do end up going to the finals and likely winning. Is that something you feel as well? Because that's one that haunts me on a daily basis.
Yeah, and yeah, I do. I do feel that way. But also, you know, Girardi, Stahl, McDonough, and Yandel were all hurt. You know, all four of them were hurt. You know, McDonough's getting his foot frozen for game seven.
I know.
And so those guys were all banged up. And I thought that team that lost to Tampa in game seven was the team that would go, was the team with the best chance to win the Stanley Cup, better than the 2014 team. I thought that team was built better. And it didn't, but Zuccarello was a huge loss, and to be honest, Zuccarello then was a really good player then. You know, he wasn't a great player then. By the time they traded him, he was pretty close to being a great player. But yeah, that was a big loss, and it was such a freaky thing, and it was such a frightening thing, such a scary thing for him, for anybody who knew him, and for all of his friends on the team. It was just an awful situation.
Diving a little bit into this year, Rick, before we let you go, again, this is game night 9. We're recording before the Jets game. Your thoughts on the early season Rangers this year? Don't know how much you've been able to watch. You're off the beat. You're retired. You don't got to be in the press room anymore. There may have been a couple nights, especially some of those 10 o'clock starts that I don't even want to stay up for. I'm sure you didn't either. But your impression of the early season Rangers coming out to a really strong start, even without goals from Mika Zibanejad and Phil Hedl at this point.
Yeah. I think they both have one disallowed too, right?
That's right.
That's correct.
Okay. So I have watched almost every game, almost every minute of every game. I've dozed on a couple of the 10 o'clock games. I've dozed off at points. But
makes sense.
And I've also, flipped back and forth to the World Series a little bit. So, but I've watched them, and I think that, I think it looks like the trajectory of the young players is good. I think this team is still close to being a contender if those kids take those steps. I think the 1-3-1 that they play now, by March, you guys will be sick of it. They're going to be so freaking boring to watch. In many nights in the dog days of the season, they're going to be like watching the Devils or the more recent Islanders teams. They're going to be playing low event hockey, but they have the offense to, when they counter, to do some damage. That 1-3-1, as much as I hate it, as much as it's an eyesore, you need to have something like that in place in April. Simple as that. And they did not have that last year. They didn't have any way of slowing down Jack Hughes and the Devils. And they still could have won that series. I think that what they're doing now is they're building a way to play for April. And that is so perfect a way to approach this season. They're going to make the playoffs. They're going to be a get-in team that has a chance, but they have to have a way to play. And what I'm seeing is a team that's learning how to do that. I think their power play is going to be fine. Zibanejad's going to be fine. Panarin's going to be great. Fox is going to be great. Shesterkin's going to be great. If Hedl continues to play the way he has, if Lafreniere continues, I think they need more from Keandre Miller. They're going to be a team, and Kako too. Obviously, I think, although in my opinion, Kako's a better fit for Panarin than Lafreniere is, because
they hate playing together, Rick. This has been my big fear for years.
But Panarin needs a guy who's going to play along the wall, who's going to hold the puck, who's going to be defensively responsible. And I don't know that Lafreniere is that guy yet. So we'll see. But at any rate, that's what I see. What I see is a team that's pretty good right now, but more importantly, is building the foundation for the team they're going to need to be in April, and then hopefully in May, and then maybe if everything aligns, in June. That's what I think of this team.
I think it's a good evaluation. And look, one of the things you could say in playoff hockey is, all you need is a hot goalie.
No.
Well, last year, Igor Shesterkin was as hot as it could get.
Yeah.
They still lost in 7.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really matter.
You don't. Hot goalies lose, too, in the playoffs. Plenty of them do. And then every once in a while, you get Aiden Hill, right? And then you get, you get guys who won the Stanley Cup for – which Hall of Fame goalie won the Stanley Cup for Colorado. You need good goaltending. Yes, you need maybe great goaltending sometimes, but certainly having a Shesterkin or a Lundqvist or a Richter sure helps your chances. But you have to play. You can't have your goalie facing 15 two-on-ones. You can't have your goalie bailing you out when you're stuck in your own end for a minute 50, a minute 6, you know, a minute and 55 seconds. You can't have that. And the Rangers, over recent years, despite their record, have given up odd man rush after odd man rush, who have been pinned in their own end, and not just the fourth line and not just the third line. You know, Zibanejad's been pinned in his end, and Panarin's been pinned in his end. That these are things that have to get into the rearview mirror if this team's going to win. And I think that that's what they're trying to build here. That I think that's the thing. It's, you know, could they win with Adin Hill? I don't know.
You know, probably not.
Yeah, probably not. But you know, I mean, but they have Shesterkin, so that's a worry they don't have this year. The teams that have great goaltending, don't worry. The teams that don't, like Edmonton, and you say, well, can they win with what they have? You know, but there's both sides of that coin. The Rangers already have that. The Rangers don't have to worry about Shesterkin. As long as he's healthy, they're fine. But the other things, they need to get straightened out. They need to get the house in order before April.
Edmonton has two absolute star players and then a bunch of, what is happening here? And that's kind of it. Greg, you're good with questions for our dear friend Rick?
Oh, I was just going to ask. You mentioned watching the World Series, Rick. So now I got to – did you get all your anti-Scherzer bets in today like I did? It's very important stuff.
My money means way too much to me to gamble, especially now that I don't make any.
Good point. So, well, let's help you make some. Yeah. You can find The Franchise, the New York Rangers, the New York, a curated history of the Blue Shirts on Amazon or anywhere you can find books today. It is available for purchase. It is written by our good dear friend, Rick Carpinello. Sorry about that, Rick. My brain just exploded because I was looking at the cover in this great book. Anything else you want to plug these days,
Hey,
Rick?
You know what? I took the cover photo.
Did you?
You like it?
Look at you artist. This is nice.
Pretty good, right?
It's classy. Yeah, it's good.
I should get extra money for that.
Well, I'm surprised you didn't. Come on, you got it. You need a better negotiator, Rick. This is right. Where I come in.
Right. Yeah, call Greg.
I should have called Greg.
Rick, cannot thank you enough, and we'll hopefully have you back on, I don't know, sometime later in the season if things go crazy.
I love it. Guys, always enjoy talking to you. Always good to see you, and let's do it again. Thank you so much for the opportunity to push my wares here, and I really appreciate it.
Oh, please. If you don't get the book, you're a loser, everybody. I mean, you should support Rick. That's what I mean. Thanks, everyone. Thank you. Bye. All right, and we're back. Good interview with Rick. It's nice talking to him.
It's good catching up. It's been a minute.
He's a good lad. He really is.
He's all right. He does fine. He does all right.
Five-star questions. If you want to leave a five-star question, go to our Patreon. Mm. And from there, you could sign up and go to Discord. And then we have a five-star question section. We read them on the show. Sometimes they get messages like, hey, this is my five-star question, but I'm sending it through Twitter. I only read this chat, and I read it once a week. because I can hardly read, as I told Rick. We talked on we talked about this week a lot of the second. This is from Jets Rangers. Let's just get right into it. Two thoughts on the nickname for the second line. One is nice. One not so nice. How about the Dynamite Trio? I'm out on this one.
Yeah, no.
Or the Fug Line, out as well.
Yeah, I'm still out on French toast.
I know you're out on French toast. I think it's where it's going to stick here. I do like Doughboys. It does roll more.
I think Doughboys. I see what you did there.
Thank you.
Well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, Doughboys is it, again.
Just wanted to prove that one out.
Not only does Doughboys sound good, it's just so much easier to explain.
Mm.
I would also like. What's the difference between French toast and French bread?
Oh, this is actually a good one. So this isn't the same one. This is from Gooses. Thoughts on the nickname ESL, English Second Language, as Panarin Heat a laugh. That's pretty funny. It's pretty funny. That's actually pretty good.
I know, but still, we're trying too hard.
I know, but credit to that. That was a good joke.
I get it. Doughboys is right there. I'm sticking with Doughboys.
Molly's name was apparently the Revelation Line.
She said that a couple times on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it is. There's a lot of different questions. This is from Rootin' Tootin'. If Lav was the coach, is Kravtsov still here? No.
I don't know.
I don't think so. I think Kravtsov like had a chance to play in Vancouver, and like not that there are any great shakes.
Did he, though? I honestly don't watch enough of Vancouver every night, and I know enough about Rick Tocchet to know that I don't necessarily have to believe he gave Kravtsov every chance possible. Here's the thing. I no longer care. Yep. I'm done. It did not work last year. Whether you want to blame that on Gallant, whether you want to blame it on Drury for getting that point, whether you want to blame it on Kravtsov for not taking more authority with having an opportunity and running with it, blame whoever you want. I don't care anymore. He's gone. Just like I don't like people that still bring up Elias Anderson. It's over. At some point, you need to find a new show.
This is from Trooper Train. Which player has been more pleasantly surprised by? Have been more pleasantly surprised by? And which player do you still want to see more from? AKA, whatever, you get the fucking question.
You really can't read, man. It's 10:40. I get it.
Reading is hard. pleasantly surprised. Look, Lafreniere, what else do you want me to say? He's been awesome.
I'll say this, though. I was kind of expecting Lafreniere to play like this. Which player has exceeded my expectations? Will Cooley.
He's been awesome, too.
He's been... I am now at a point with Will Cooley where I can't imagine him coming out of this lineup ever.
Yeah, already he's kind of automatically like a guy. You're like, okay, I can get a decade out of him. Like, we'll be a Ranger for a decade.
Yeah, he's not going anywhere. He's the new Brian Boyle. Shout out up in the blue seats.
Speaking of Elias Anderson, I believe that was the trade for Elias Anderson. It was Elias Anderson to the Kings for the second round pick that became Will Cooley.
So to a certain degree, the Rangers won the trade.
I would say so. That's what you get seventh overall. This is from Jack Expedition. Love this question. Can you do a deep dive analysis on Ron Duguay starting beef with Sam and Joe on Twitter during a 3-0 lead?
I can. Here's the thing. Alcohol, don't drink and tweet. You know the scene in The Waterboy where Lawrence Taylor introduces Bobby Boucher to the group of campers and Bobby starts talking absolute nonsense to them? And Lawrence Taylor says, that brings me to my next point. Don't smoke crack. That's what Ron Duguay did on Twitter during that game.
Yeah, dude, you got to be on some sort of substance to be like, is Sam Rosen a phony? Okay. This is like when we've all had them. Maybe some of you haven't, but we've all had high thoughts.
I've never had those high thoughts.
But that is one of them. Like, hey, you guys think Sam Rosen's a phony? And everyone kind of looks at you like, no, dude.
Ryan,
like,
you and I get high and we start having thoughts about whether Moonfall is a good movie.
Well, first of all, it's a great movie. Guys, the moon falls.
That's where we go when we're having a good night.
Yeah.
Ron Duguay, and then he deletes the tweets.
Can't delete the tweets.
Just a little piss, baby.
Can't delete the tweets. This is from Pinto's Proxy. What does Leff have to do to quell the fan base? He's had a slow preseason, and the fan base is all over him. He's now scored three straight, and the base is still saying, it's still early yet, don't hold your breath. All right, Pinto, I'm gonna sit you down real quick. You're right. You're correct on all the things you're saying. But I will tell you, the Rangers have won 5 in a row, and I will definitely have motherfuckers telling me tonight, hey, it's still early. Enjoy it. just enjoy it.
I just have a question for you and for Pinto here.
Yes.
Who the fuck are you guys following that you see this shit? You tweeted about Kane the other day. Ryan, I haven't seen shit about Kane in a month.
I saw so much Kane stuff.
I haven't seen anything. And you follow less people than I do.
I do follow the one person who tweets about Kane.
Oh, I blocked I blocked his ass. I'm retired.
I would like to say it wasn't about him, and then he responded to it, and it was the best.
God damn it. The kid's 12. Cut him some slack.
I think he's not 12.
Well, he's not an adult either, Ryan. That's all I'm saying. I don't know. I haven't seen anyone complaining about Lafreniere in at least 10 days. And I haven't seen the mention of the Rangers and Kane, unless it's people saying, I can't believe people are mentioning the Rangers and Kane in longer. Guys, just follow less people. You don't have to follow everybody. I promise you.
I do love the one tweet. Like, maybe we should know less about each other. That seems like a good idea.
That's fucking true, man.
It's true. Speaking of Pinto's Proxy, this is from Cole. Which Ranger would get caught gambling, and what would it be on?
Chris Kreider?
Yes.
Coyote hunting.
Yeah, coyote hunting, fencing, but the version of it where it's like chess boxing. So it's like coyote hunting and fencing. It's just that.
Yeah, Chris Kreider comes into the locker room and he's like, did you guys catch the game last night? And someone says, oh, you mean the World Series? And he goes, no, man. Ilya Chenchenko and Vladimir Torchev had a really tough fencing match last night.
Yeah, and then they missed the shot on the coyote in the Arizona desert. And it's like, oh,
yeah,
man,
and he bets in, like, rubles?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's Chris Kreider. This is from AZK. Do you guys think part of the reason Panarin is on fire and is having literally any system means he can have an idea of where his teammates will be? This is actually a pretty good thing. This is a good one.
Yeah. No more is he hoping people are at the end of his passes. He understands now that there's a system to be played here, so if he sets the puck in a specific spot, someone will probably be there.
This is from Bradley. Is Gallant also to blame for Power Play 2 looking like a bunch of us out there most of the time? A bunch of us is really, really good. But yeah. Next question. This is from David. After the New York Giants and New York Jets game, is Laviolette the best coach
in New York? I was waiting for
this
question.
Oh, my God.
Here's my hot take, Ryan. The Mets' open vacancy is the best coach in New York right now. Because it could be anybody.
Well, this is why you don't take draft picks. This is why you take the known asset in Peter Laviolette. I'm using your logic against you. That could be a boat. You don't know.
Listen, the boat could be the best coach in the New York. Because
you cannot do this.
Go through it, man. Go through it. It's
all right. It's not Boone.
It's not Boone.
No.
It's not
Dable.
Salah. It's not Dable.
No.
It's apparently not the empty seat in the Mets office.
It's not.
Is it Tibbs?
It's not Tibbs, man.
Well, it's got to be someone, Ryan. At some point, it has to be someone. And you're telling me it's 9 games of Peter Laviolette?
I think it's 10 games of Peter Laviolette.
I don't think it is. I legitimately think the best coach in New York is the fact that the Mets don't have one. That's how I think down bad New York City is right now with it's their rough. Coaches.
I think you can make a really good case for Laviolette, though.
The best case is the fact that the Mets could have a good coach. That's the best. Tibbs has to be in front of Laviolette still, just because of where the Knicks are in terms of having firm footing. We're pretty sure the Knicks are a good team, which is a really, really long way for that franchise to have come. So Tibbs deserves some credit for that. I can't put Laviolette in front of Tibbs, but I don't feel comfortable saying Tibbs is the best coach in New York. That's why I'm saying it's the open seat in the Mets office.
It's from Trav Shed. This is something we've never actually talked about, which is weird. God. No, it's fine. Holy crap, we only have 2 more years of Panarin after this contract. What do you guys think would need to happen to keep him in New York in 2025-26? I think Panarin wants to be here, like, at all costs.
Yeah.
And I'm not really worried about losing him and figuring it out. I'm just not.
Yeah, I don't know.
He'll be older, and you got to see. It's going to be 2 more years. He'll be 34. But I'd imagine he'd take a 3-year deal for cheap.
But the way the world's going, Ryan, we might not have to worry about it.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. This is from Sean Carlson 4. Revisiting my question from last week, wouldn't a fan as an emergency QB be just as effective as Tommy DeVito on Sunday?
The Giants had a chance to win that game. If Graham Gano made that field goal, the Giants would have won that game with -8 passing yards. -8.
I think that's why I wish they would have won. This is not a shot at Jets fans, but the ability to win a game with -8 passing yards is really tremendous.
The funnier thing is, as Tommy DeVito finished with more fantasy points than Desmond Ridder.
Jesus.
Quarterback play in the NFL, Ryan, has never been worse.
No,
never been
not.
Worse.
We're going to end on a little bit of a serious question.
What?
It's a pretty easy answer from us. This is from Phil L. I know it's more serious than usual questions, but what are your views on players wearing neck, wrist, and ear protection? Should the NHL attempt to mandate it in agreement with players?
First of all, I don't want to see the video.
I don't want to see the video.
It's tragic.
So bad for all the teammates, everybody involved, the family, everybody.
And I think it... The fact that it happened in the UK, a country that is new to hockey, cares about this domestic league that they have.
Mm-hmm.
This is for this to happen there. I do think it carries a weight that just hits hard. I think it's really hard to explain. It's a tragedy any way you talk about it.
To answer the question, I will say I don't think ear or wrist protection really ever gets mandated, period. I don't really see that happening. I could see some players wearing neck gear moving on, but I also don't think the NHL mandates it.
No.
It's a complete freak accident.
Yeah, and I think every player, when they take the ice, is aware of all the risks that could happen to them at any point in time. So if any of them want to wear extra protection in any way, shape, or form, I'm talking full cages, yep. Neck protection, whatever any player wants to wear to feel protected, they should do. But I also, I'm not going to sit down. It's not like, this isn't like wearing a seatbelt in a car where if you don't do it, you're just an idiot.
Yep.
I think in order to play effectively on the ice, you have to do so feeling as comfortable as possible. And if a player is uncomfortable wearing extra protection, it could impact their game where maybe they're playing too cautious and that leads to an injury, right? So it's one of those things where whatever any player has to do to feel comfortable, to feel protected, to feel safe is what they have to do. But I'm not going to criticize a player if they feel more comfortable not wearing a neck guard.
Yeah, I'm not going to come on here and just say, I can't believe these guys aren't all wearing neck guards next week. That's just not something that's going
to
happen.
But if they all do, I'd say I totally understand it. I am sympathetic to whatever any player wants to do in this regard. I just, whatever they have to do to feel safe and comfortable, I fully support. So
I'm the same way, but I just don't think the NHL will ever mandate something like this. Just won't happen. Won't happen.
No, I agree.
It's a freak incident. Total freak. It's awful.
And it has, I mean, I don't think it led to a death, but we've seen it in the NHL. The goalie usually is where we've seen it, right?
That's correct.
Though we've seen a couple players. I don't remember the player specific, but I remember someone in the corner, a guy got twisted around and someone's skate went high and they got cut and they had to rush to the hospital.
That was last year, right?
I don't know how. It was recent. We were podcasting for it. I know that.
Yes, that was
it. It happens. But, you know, it's a violent game. Violent injuries are going to happen. It's, however you want to protect yourself, you should.
Yep. Absolutely. I feel for everybody involved, for real.
Yeah.
It's awful.
There's no easy answer. It's so, 29, man, that is so young.
It's miserable. Everything about it is miserable.
Yeah.
Everything about it is miserable, and anybody who makes it like a talking point is like, you're doing this wrong, man.
Yeah.
You really
just
are.
You know, just grieve however you want to grieve. I don't need to debate it. It's sad that we lost a 29-year-old hockey player because
you can stop right there, buddy. Like,
yeah,
that's it.
Man. Like, 29 was 5 years ago for us, dude. Like,
you can't tell me it's sad.
I don't know. I mean, I'm more grown up now than I was then. I'm still an idiot. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, no one's questioning that.
Yeah. I lose the hockey debate part of it. To me, it's with 29-year-old kid is no longer here. And that's just like, the older I get, anytime someone our age or younger dies, it just like just hits me in a different way that you're never expecting.
Same, buddy. Anyway, Rangers 5-0. Awesome. We'll be back with BSBOT on Thursday night. I don't think we missed anything in the show, did we?
No. What would we have missed? The Mets haven't done anything.
No. David posted a why not us picture. It's not soon. It's too soon.
I know it was injury related, but I see Scherzer didn't get out of the third inning again today.
Yeah, that's injury related though. Are they still winning? I don't know.
I don't know. Whatever. I saw Adolis Garcia also got hurt. Oh, Texas won. How about that?
Oh, there you go. Go Texas, I guess, or whatever. I don't really care.
I won money on Scherzer's under. That's all I care about.
Lowest rated World Series game ever. Awesome.
I also don't care about that either. Like, who cares?
Yeah, just watch it. If you like watching baseball, watch baseball.
Yeah, I watched parts of game two. Yeah, and I was like, cool, man. Great.
We'll be back with BSBOT on Thursday night. After the Hurricane game. So we'll see you guys then. You can follow me on Twitter at O'Reilly. You can follow Greg at Blue Shirts Break. We'll see you guys then. Love you. Bye. Hey, it's really late at night and I'm recording the end of the show. So this part of the show, I talk about the NHL Insiders Club, my favorite place to talk hockey anywhere. It's on our Patreon. And I thank all our supporters because we couldn't make it possible without them. We do the show every single week and we thank all our Patreon supporters, but I name these people by name at the end of every episode because I hate myself and I love them. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Emma Cartula, Adam Keach, Alex Flynn, Alex Gardner, Amber Coensberger, Andrew Roner, Anthony Gray, Anthony Maturu. Maturu? That's the first time I've said it like that. I'm an impressive human being. Anthony Tanagreta, Ben Waters, Ben Weber, Ben Lovayer. Am I hallucinating? Bill Olsen, Bill Rattel, Brandon Lacos, Brandon Magnum, Brett Granger, Brett Margetis, Brian Doherty. I've had a really hard time speaking tonight. Like, I know I podcast and you listen to me a lot of the times for some stupid reason. But tonight, especially with Greg, I think I had a couple times where my brain just froze. Did not work. Brian Doherty, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Brian Farrell, Cassidy, Cassidy Rollman, Chris Finelli, Chris Harrow, CJ Stelwick, Conrad Predamage, Daniel Delaney, Daniel Dezen, David Naren, David Siegel, Eric Stagg, Garrett Reynes, Greg thinks about the Mets during the sex, Gretzky, McFly, Harrison Hayek, he's an awesome player, Harrison Hasco, Hello Vanilla, Hip Hop 89, Jack Bagley, James Masker, Jerry Marquez, Jason Steamer, Jason Nebraska, Jimmy Mack, John Hardesty, John Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Kishabam, Josh White, Christopher Florida, Leszek Gronowski, Luigi Arnano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kai, Meatball the Cat, Mike Michael Koenig, Mike Bucklaw, Mike Mancuso, Mike Pasternak, Nate Hanafy, Neil Grover, Other Slash, Pascal Perrier, Paul J. Smith, Pavel, Phoenix Ignition, PJ Sparrow, Pro World Tanks Gamer, Randy Tesser, Swinegarth, Drop PK, Tommy Sinclair, Tommy Tedeschi, Tony O'Neill, Tony Gregory, two first names. Turf from Manhattan, the original supporter, Vinny Bracco, Wayne E., Will Spector, and Winston the Golden Retriever. Bark to debark, bark, bark. Just want this game to like happen now. I'm super pumped up on the Rangers, and I know they need these 3 days off, but kind of fiending this Hurricanes game already. Probably won't be feeding it after the game on Thursday. I hope I will be. We will be back then. I'm a very tired boy. Happy that Rick came on the show. Love all of you. Love for the Rangers. I think the team's good. I think they're good. I keep like, all right, well, I wasn't going to do this rant, but here we are. When the Rangers traded for Kane and had Vlad Tarasenko last season, really kind of convinced myself, really thought to myself, this is it. This is sort of the best team on paper the Rangers will ever have. They will never have more talent. They will never have more skill than what they have right now. And it just never really came to bear. The power play never looked as dangerous. The 5v5, like, while it was fixed, I actually think they were a better team, a little bit more dangerous the year before with Kopp and Vetrano. And shout out to Vetrano, by the way, he's having a hell of a year. But I don't know, man. I know we're only 10 games in. Things are clicking. Love the way we're playing. Just 10 games. A lot more of the season left. Not only 9 games, actually, but still. I just think back to that one tweet. I was like, guys, savor this. You so much talent. You're not going to see this again. But then you win 5 in a row on a road trip. You've never won 5 in a row before. And it's kind of like, was I appreciating the wrong thing? These are questions I ask myself late at night. Talk to you guys later. Love you guys. Bye.